Chapter 19. England, 1944. With the rain coming down so hard, it was difficult to even see the bridge. When they did, they both drew in their breaths. The river was high and already running over a bridge that didn't look like it could hold a bicycle, much less a heavy car. "That thing is pre-Columbian art," David said as he slowed down, wiped the windshield, and stared ahead. "Late medieval," Eddie said. "Look at the stone pillars on the side. They, so help me, if you start giving me a history lecture, I'll throw you out." She thought he was lying for effect, but she wasn't absolutely sure, so she said nothing more. David put his hand over the back of the seat and reversed the old car. "I'm going to hit that bridge at a run. We'll either get across it, or we'll skid and go over the side, probably upside down. Are you ready?" Eddie braced herself and nodded. "On second thought, why don't you get out and wait for me?" "If another man impugns my courage, I'll take one of the rifles out of the back and shoot him." David blinked at her. "Rifles in the back?" he said, under his breath. "I'm driving an antique tank. I bet this thing was used in Sarajevo." In spite of the situation, Eddie gave a bit of a smile. In 1914, World War I was started when Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Austria and his wife were assassinated in Sarajevo. It looked like that, in contrast to his seeming crassness, Sergeant Clare knew a bit about history. She held her breath as he got to the top of a little hill and gunned the motor. Then he moved the shift down to low, let up on the clutch while his foot was on the brake, and in the next minute, they went toward the old bridge in a dense flurry of mud and water. Eddie could see nothing. The windshield was covered in seconds, and the wiper blades refused to even try to cut into the mud. The only way she knew they'd reached the bridge was when she heard the bottom of the car hit the wood. There was a hollow sound that incongruously made her think of the Three Billy Goats Gruff. When they hit the road again, and the bridge was behind them, they both yelled in triumph. And that was when they saw the cow. The rain had washed enough of the mud off the windshield that they could see, and lazily walking across the road, as though she had all the time in the world, was a huge black and white cow. "Hold on," David yelled, as he tried to move the heavy car to the side and not hit the cow. At the moment, he wouldn't have cared if he smashed the thing, but a cow that big would make them crash. But they crashed anyway. The car hit the hedgerow at the side of the road, went into a spin, then turned around twice before heading back toward the bridge. David fought the big steering wheel with all his might, but then the leg brace tightened up on him and he couldn't move his knee. While turning the wheel, he had to lean toward Eddie as he fought to get the clutch all the way to the floor so he could downshift and try to slow the car. But the clutch, the brake, and the mud were all too much for him and the old car. The car flipped over. Eddie tumbled upside down, and the big car slipped on its top down into the river beside the bridge that they'd just successfully crossed. For a few seconds, both of them were stunned, not able to realize what had just happened. There was blood on the side of David's head, and Eddie's right arm hurt. "You have to get out," David said, reaching for her. She'd been thrown, so she was on the roof of the overturned car, but David was still behind the wheel and hanging with his head down. She followed his eyes and saw that the water was rising around them. The only thing keeping the water out was the closed windows of the car, but that wouldn't last long. "Yes," she managed to say. She was dazed, not sure what was happening. "I'll open the window and we'll swim out." She was pleased that she'd been able to see what needed to be done. "Can you swim?" he asked. "Yes, quite well," she answered. Her head was clearing with each second. What about you?
High school swim team, he said, and gave her his little grin that she'd seen several times.
Okay, then, she said. Are you ready? We need to go as soon as I get the window down.
Hey, Harcourt, he said softly.
A favor?
How about a kiss before you go?
A kiss? You think that now is the time to...
She broke off when she realized what he'd said repeatedly. When she went, not him, just her.
What's wrong with you?
It's this damned brace, he said. Bad luck on my part. It's steel, and it's stuck. I can't get out. Eddie gave a look at the water surrounding them, and the rain still coming down hard. In minutes, they were going to be completely underwater, and the pressure would probably burst the windows, and they'd drown. It wasn't easy to get her long legs and arms twisted around so she was upright, and she could get to his legs, but she did it. His foot was trapped under the crushed pedals of the car, and there was another piece of metal that had stopped at his calf.
Just move your leg. Bend at the knee and take it out. Is your leg broken?
I don't think so, but it's encased in a steel brace. You need to go. There isn't time to waste. You have to...
Shut up, she said.
How do I get you out of this thing? You can't. You aren't strong enough. My leg is trapped under some steel, and
just for once in your life, stop talking, she shouted. How do I move the brace?
In my pocket, there's an Allen wrench. I know what an Allen wrench is. For the first time, she saw that his right arm was bleeding. He couldn't get inside his own pocket. She moved so she was lying across him, then stuck her hand down deep into his pocket and found the little piece of metal. The second she had it, the window in the back of the car cracked, and the interior started filling with water.
Three screws in the round hinge at the knee, David said. You should go. Give me the wrench and get out of here.
Because the car was upside down, the last place to be filled was where David's feet were trapped, but his head was near the roof. Even if she got him loose, he might still drown before she could get him out of the car. Eddie half stood, half knelt on the roof as she reached up and pushed David's trouser leg back and tried to find the screws on the hinge to loosen them. She found one, twisted, and it moved, but she could feel the water around her legs. She looked down, and David's head was almost underwater. He was bending as far forward as he could, but he couldn't move much because of the huge steering wheel across the front of him. Eddie took a deep breath, went under the water, looked at David, and touched his lips. It took him a full second to realize what she meant. She kissed him all right. She released air into his mouth, then went back up to the brace. She got the second screw loose, then took another breath and went under to give air to David. The third screw stuck, and she thought she wasn't going to get it loosened. There were only inches of airspace in the car now. She went under again to give him more oxygen, and he motioned for her to get out. She didn't waste her time shaking her head no. She had to put her face up against the roof to get a breath of air. Then she went under to loosen the last screw. When the hinge gave way, she gave a hard push on his leg, and it moved. He was free. Eddie went downward, toward David's face, to tell him to help her get him out, but his eyes were closed, and he was limp. She pushed out with her legs to get to the roof for more air, but the car was full of water. There was no air to be had. Already her lungs were hurting. She reached across David to the big handle that turned the window and cranked it. It was difficult to move, and she could feel her arms giving out, and her head was feeling light. But she got the big window down enough that she thought she could get him out. The water made him lighter, so she was able to maneuver him toward the window enough that the current of the river seemed to suck him away. Eddie nearly panicked when David's body disappeared. But in the next second, the current grabbed her too, and she went flying upward. When she came to the surface, she took a deep breath, then was pulled down again. The next time she came up, she looked for David and saw him entangled in the roots of a tree just a few feet away. His eyes were closed, but at least his head wasn't underwater. She tried to swim to him, but the current was pulling her in the opposite direction. "Grab this," came a voice. And she turned to see a long pole just inches from her head. It seemed to be attached to something, but she couldn't see what, nor could she see who had spoken. She had to lunge at the pole twice before she caught it. Then she held on with both arms. "Him!" she yelled to the unseen person who'd saved her. "In the trees! There!" Eddie held on to the pole with her arms and swiped the water out of her eyes as she saw someone in a green coat on the bank. From the shape of him, with his hunched back, he looked to be an old man, but he was obviously strong, as he pulled David by his collar and dragged him out of the water as though he were a big fish he'd just caught. Eddie was battling hair and rain to see what was going on, but she didn't dare let go of the pole. Turning to her left, she saw that it was part of the bridge, maybe something used to ferry barges across the river. Slowly, she began to use her arms to pull herself along to try to reach the end of the bridge and the land. As she moved, she wondered what the man was doing with Sergeant Clare. Would the old man think he was dead and make no attempt to save him? If Eddie could get to him, she thought maybe she could apply some modern life-saving techniques, and maybe she could get the water out of Sergeant Clare's lungs so he wouldn't die. "Come on!" she heard a man shout. "Only another foot and you're home!" Her arms were killing her, and she was shaking with cold and fatigue, but she looked up and saw Sergeant Clare standing there. The rain was so hard and the mist so dense that she thought maybe she was seeing a ghost. Had he died and his spirit come back to help her across the raging river? "Come on, Harcourt," he shouted. "Get your back into it. I'd come out there and save you, but I'm too beat up. You'll have to do something for yourself this time. You can't always depend on me to save you." "You," she managed to say. "Why, you." As anger surged through her, she began to kick with her long legs, and she pulled harder on the pole. But even with her anger and her renewed energy, she was giving out. Instead of coming closer, the bridge seemed to be going farther away. She blinked hard to clear the water out of her eyes, but things were going hazy. In the next minute, she felt a strong arm around her. "I have you now," she heard in her ear. "You're safe now. Let go of that thing and let me have you." She obeyed the voice. Her arms fell away from the metal and went around his neck, and her head collapsed against him. She felt him carry her out of the water, and she felt someone else's hands on her.
"She dead?" she heard a man ask.
"No," she heard Sergeant Clare say. He was carrying her, and she could feel the drag of his leg from the brace that he still wore. All she'd done was loosen the knee hinge. She hadn't removed it.
"Your arm," she managed to whisper, as she remembered that it had been bleeding.
"I can't figure out if my arm hurts more or my leg. The dilemma is keeping me from fainting."
"Good," she said, as she snuggled closer to him. She closed her eyes and went to sleep.
When Eddie awoke, she was in a bed on a soft mattress, and there was sunlight coming through the window. Her head ached and her arm was sore, but she didn't feel too bad. She looked about the room. It was small, with flowered wallpaper and two beds. The bed beside hers was made up with an old quilt and fat pillows. There was a big old wardrobe against one wall and a dressing table along the other. The facing wall had a window with lace curtains. When she tried to sit up, she was a bit dizzy, but her head cleared in a minute. She heard a soft knock on the door, Then Sergeant Clare came in, carrying a tray with one arm. His right arm was in a sling.
"You're awake," he said, smiling.
Then gave his concentration back to the tray when it nearly unbalanced.
"Let me," Eddie began, as she started to get out of bed. But then she realized she was wearing only her peach rayon teddy. She hastily pulled the covers back over her. "Where are my clothes?"
"In the kitchen, dry and waiting for you," David said, as he set the tray down on the end of her bed, then stood up and flexed his arm.
"You can stop looking at me like I'm about to attack you. It's too late for modesty."
Eddie didn't drop the covers from around her neck.
"What does that mean?"
He sat down on the opposite bed, picked up a toast wedge, and began to eat it.
"If you don't want that food, I'll take it."
"I need something to put on," she said.
Reluctantly, he got up, went to the wardrobe, and pulled out a man's shirt. It was huge and nearly worn out, but Eddie took it and put her arms in the sleeves. When she was covered, she bent toward the tray and poured herself a cup of tea.
"Tell me what happened," she said. "Where are we? How soon can we get out of here and get the magazine?"
"Which answer do you want first?"
"All of them," she said.
"The accident happened yesterday, and we're now at the home of Hamish Trumbull." Eddie stopped with a piece of toast to her mouth. "It seems that Mrs. Pettigrew was so sure we wouldn't make it over the bridge that she called a neighbor who told old Hamish to get down to the river to save us."
"But you did make it over the bridge," Eddie said, sounding affronted.
"If it hadn't been for that cow, who, by the way, belongs to Hamish. If it hadn't been for his cow, we would have made it."
"Thank you," David said. "That's just what I told Hamish, but he didn't believe me.
He says we missed the bridge and went into the river upside down. He says I'm the worst driver he's ever seen."
"You should have hit his cow," Eddie said, her mouth full.
"My sentiments exactly. Here, let me pour that for you."
David used his left arm and his right hand to maneuver the teapot, his leg held stiffly out from his body.
"So, what's the story on the magazine?" Eddie asked.
"The granddaughter Aggie has it, and no one knows where she is." Eddie groaned.
"How old is she to be out unsupervised?"
16, and her goose is cooked. She told Mrs. Pettigrew that she was going home to Gramps, and told Gramps she had to work. Poor kid. When she does show up, she's in for it."
"So how long do we have to wait for her to return from wherever she is?"
"Us," David said as he got up off the bed and walked to the window. "About that us.
You see, Hamish is a bit old-fashioned, and I had to tell him some fibs."
When he didn't say anything else, just kept looking out the window, Eddie started to piece things together.
"You told him we were married, didn't you?"
"It was either that, or I had to sleep in the barn. Sorry, but the feather mattress won over the straw." She thought about the way he'd pulled her from the water yesterday, and she couldn't begrudge him a bed.
"All right, so we're married, and..."
"What?"
David turned to her with sparkling eyes.
"In your dreams, soldier," she said.
"If wishes were horses," David said, then dragged his leg as he crossed the room to sit back down on the other bed.
"It seems that Aggie the missing is due back here day after tomorrow. All we can hope is that she shows up with the magazine."
"You didn't tell Hamish."
"I didn't tell that old man anything. Mrs. Pettigrew made up a great whopping lie about the magazine being some sort of spy vehicle, and the entire fate of the war resting on our getting it back. She..."
"Why are you looking at me like that?
Please tell me that isn't true."
"I don't know," she mumbled, eating the last piece of toast.
"I want you to tell me every word that you do know, and don't even think about not telling me all of it." It took her about 4 minutes to tell him all that she knew. It wasn't much. So you're to give the magazine to this man, Dr. Sebastian Jellicoe. Then we're to get him to London so he can be sent back to the safety of Minnesota, or someplace in the U.S. Is that right? David asked. That's what I was told. But where he lives, and the map to get there, is inside the car, which is now at the bottom of an overflowing river. Eddie leaned back against the headboard. I memorized the map.
You did what?
While you were in the front of the car, whining that nobody would talk to you, I was in the back, memorizing the map. I was hoping to find the marks in the magazine and memorize them too, but I couldn't find anything.
Whining, David said, picking up on the one word.
If you were in as much pain as I was, you'd be complaining too.
What happened to your leg? Eddie asked.
And as she said it, she remembered how she'd gone underwater and loosened the screws, and how she'd kissed him to give him air. For a moment, their eyes met, and he seemed to be thinking about the same thing. But he broke away and pulled up the leg of his trousers. Your general, that Satan you work for, decided that an uninjured man traveling around England would rouse too many suspicions, so he had me disabled. Eddie looked at the bottom half of the brace and at the round hinge she knew well, and she couldn't help it, but she started to laugh.
I don't see anything funny about this, David said. I have blisters all over my leg where it rubs against me, and will you please stop laughing?
I think he did it to protect me, Eddie said, still laughing. He's like an old sultan, and he thinks of all of us women who work for him as his vestal virgins. David stopped frowning.
Yeah, he does have the most beautiful of all the women.
Half of them are idiots, Eddie said. I hired a woman who could type 100 words a minute without an error, but that old bulldog fired her because she was ugly. He said he wasn't going to survive bombs and ugly women.
David laughed. She isn't the one who works for Colonel Osborne, is she?
Eddie nodded.
She can do more work than 3 of Austin's girls.
Except you.
Except me, Eddie agreed. But I get stuck with trying to deal with all of them. One day I almost got hit by a falling roof when one of the girls ran back to get her lipstick. I told her that gunpowder was the best eyeshadow there was, and she was going to get plenty of it if she didn't get moving.
And you know what? She believed me.
You're kidding.
Not at all. You know Lenny?
Escobar?
David's eyes widened.
I saw him taking the powder out of some shells.
It wasn't for...
It was.
Laughing, David moved back on the bed and lifted his leg onto it.
Okay.
So now all we can do is wait until Aggie shows up and hope she has the magazine.
In the meantime, I think Hamish means for you and me to stay busy.
What does that mean?
He had me in the barn this morning. He looked away, and Eddie thought maybe his face was red.
In the barn doing what?
Remember the cow?
I will go to my grave remembering that cow, Eddie said.
What about her?
Her is the key word.
Oh, Eddie said, smiling. He had you milking.
And mucking. I think that's the proper term for using a pitchfork to remove manure. She looked at him.
How did you do that? With an arm in a sling and your leg like that? Can you move it?
Not at all. I think the hinge rusted.
We'll have to get it off you, Eddie said. Maybe this man has an Allen wrench.
No, David said sadly. No Allen wrench that will fit. No anything that will fit. I was in the barn at 4 a.m. this morning, because it seems that's when cows want to be milked and horses have to have their floors swabbed. I tried every tool the old man has, but nothing worked. The screws are set deep into the steel. They're rusted, and nothing will touch them.
You didn't by chance, you know. Know what? Hold on to the little Allen wrench after you...
Saved your life?
No, Eddie said. I didn't think to hold on to it. I guess I was a bit busy with the window and the water and all that.
Just thought I'd ask.
From outside the room came a loud voice.
Claire? You in there?
David rolled his eyes. I'd rather go back to the front lines than deal with that old man. I'm telling you that Austin is a sweetheart compared to him.
I'll get up and see what I can do to help, Eddie said. I better warn you that I think he expects you to cook.
At that, Eddie's face turned pale, and she put the cover back over her.
I don't know how to cook.
You don't know how to cook? Don't give me that, she snapped. I grew up in a house with a cook. I don't know anything about it. Food was served to me on a plate. I can't even make a pot of tea.
Really?
David said, his smile becoming broader by the minute.
What is so very amusing about that, Sergeant Claire?
Because I can cook.
You can cook? She said in astonishment.
So now who's stereotyping? My mother is Italian. I can cook. Look, why don't we tell him that you're injured and have to stay in bed? So I'll do the cooking.
And who will milk the cow?
Let old Hamish do it. He does it when we're not here.
So you're saying that I'm just a poor, feeble woman who can't pull her own weight, is that it? I'm to stay in bed and do nothing?
Unless you can milk a cow and clean up after horses, I don't think there's anything you can do.
As it so happens, I nearly grew up on a horse.
Of course, David said. Rich girl. The kitchen is beneath you, but you're a stable lad in the barn.
You really are the most obnoxious man I have ever met in my life, Eddie said.
He stood up and looked down at her as he walked to the door.
And you, Miss Edeline Harcourt, are the most beautiful, intelligent, resourceful, courageous woman I have ever met. And by the way, I plan to marry you.
He left the room, leaving Eddie with her mouth open in astonishment.
You're a mess. You know that? David said as he pried Eddie's hands open and looked at the blisters. What got into you to do all that work?
I don't know, she said, shrugging. It felt good. I get so tired of being inside and listening to typewriters all day. I liked being outside.
They were in the kitchen of Hamish Trumbull's house, and there was a night and day difference between the way it was now and how it had looked that morning. For all his complaining that Eddie had worked too hard, David had spent the day scrubbing the kitchen, inside every cabinet and every pan. He'd filled the wood box and kept the old stove going all day as he cooked. The room was warm and smelled wonderful.
You haven't exactly sat around, she said, wincing as he examined her hands.
No, but I had help, he said without a smile, and the absurdity of that made them both start to laugh. Then they quietened.
Where is he? Eddie asked, referring to Hamish.
I wore him out with churning butter, David said, as he got some and slathered it on her blisters.
Butter? You can make butter?
Of course. How did you think you got it?
By pumping the cow's tail up and down, she said.
David laughed. Okay, so I'm no farmer, but I know what to do once the stuff's in the kitchen.
Taste this.
He dipped a wooden spoon into a pan bubbling on the stove and held it to her lips. When she started to take it from him, he pulled back.
Delicious, she said. I've never tasted anything like it. What is it?
Alfredo sauce to go on the pasta.
The what?
Spaghetti, he said. You Americans call all pasta spaghetti. Are you ready to eat? She stood up slowly. This morning, she'd raided the wardrobe in the bedroom they shared and found a pair of men's trousers that almost fit her. They were long enough,
but they were so big around the waist that she'd had to make a new hole in an old leather belt to hold the pants up. She and David had shared a laugh over both of them wearing trousers that were too big. Eddie had spent the day outside, and David had stayed in. Both of them had soon seen that the little farm was nearly falling down. With all the young, strong men at war, most of the farms were neglected. But this one seemed worse than usual.
That morning, Eddie had met Hamish for the first time, and instead of seeing a gruff old man, as David described, she saw sadness.
"Don't ask him anything," she whispered to David. "I can't bear to hear the answer."
So many people had horror stories about the loss of loved ones that Eddie couldn't take any more.
"Agreed," David said.
She found the falling down old shed that served as a henhouse and got a few eggs. After breakfast, she started on cleaning up the outside. As David said, she'd not had much to do with the kitchen when she was growing up, but she loved the barn and the henhouse and all the things that had made Edeline Manor nearly self-sufficient. When she went into the house for lunch, the kitchen was sparkling, and David had just pulled bread out of the oven. That he'd done all that with one arm in a sling and his unbending leg made her smile in appreciation. After lunch, she tackled the chicken coop. One of the fence posts around the yard had fallen over, pulling the fence down with it. If any foxes decided to enter, nothing would stop them. The wind was picking up, and Eddie wanted to get the post back up before it started to rain again. She was digging the hole and trying to hold the post at the same time when David came running with his odd gait and took over. She held the post while he stamped it in. Then together they put stones around the edge of the fence. "I have to get back," he said loudly over the wind that was getting stronger. "Don't stay out here too long." "I won't," she called back. But once he was inside, she got a pitchfork and started cleaning out the inside of the henhouse. From the look of it, it hadn't been cleaned in a couple of years. It wasn't good for the chickens or the people eating them. She didn't realize her hands were blistered until she'd finished. She had a tall pile of manure outside the fence, and she'd dragged 2 fresh bales of straw from the barn into the chicken coop. She looked in the barn for some gloves, but couldn't find any, so she went on with the chores barehanded. By sundown, she'd made headway on the barn, both in repairing and mucking out. She didn't realize how tired she was until she went inside and sat down. David took one look at her and took over. He opened her hands, washed them, then slathered them with butter to help the pain of the blisters. "Oh, no, you don't," he said when she nearly fell asleep in the chair. "You need to eat."
"You sound like my mother."
"I'll take that as a compliment," David said as he set a huge plate of homemade pasta with a cream-based sauce in front of her. "I want you to eat every bite of that and drink all the milk. You need your strength."
"Yes, sir," she said.
She was so tired that she couldn't even keep her rigid posture of sitting upright as she ate, and she smiled as she thought of what her mother would say if she saw her daughter now. "Want to share the reason for that smile?" David asked as he filled a plate for himself. "I was just thinking about my family." "Tell me about them," he said. "Rich farmers, right?" "Used to be," she said, "but the rich part is gone. We used to own an entire town, but..."
"But what?"
"It doesn't matter. That seems like a lifetime ago." "This is really good. Ever think of opening a restaurant?"
"Did you ever think about visiting New York? There's an Italian restaurant on every corner."
"Is he okay, do you think?" Eddie whispered, nodding toward Hamish's closed bedroom door. "Based on the sound of his snoring, I think he's been sleeping all day, or else someone's been throwing grenades into that room."
"You're awful," Eddie said, smiling. "Poor man is worn out. Don't forget that he saved both our lives.
Humph, David said. Do you know how he revived me?
I saw him pull you out of the water, and I remember hoping that you weren't dead.
He slammed his foot on my stomach.
He what?
Like this, David said, and he hit the floor with his unbraced leg.
Pow!
I nearly choked as I started to vomit up water and Mrs. Pettigrew's lunch. Eddie tried not to laugh, but couldn't help it. And we wondered why Aggie didn't want to come home. If I lived with him, I'd join the army, even if I were a 16-year-old girl.
Come on, he's not that bad.
You didn't spend the day inside with him. You should have heard him complain about the way you were working on that chicken house.
Coop.
What?
Hen house or chicken coop, but never mind, Eddie said.
What did he say about me?
David shook his head in disbelief.
He said,
he lowered his voice. He said that if he had a wife with legs like yours, he wouldn't be in the house washing the floor. At least, not with a mop.
He didn't.
Cross my heart, David said, and made the gesture.
He wanted to go out there and help you, but I talked him out of it.
And how did you do that?
I showed him my fist, then looked at his scrawny old face.
Eddie laughed hard, putting her hand over her mouth to hold the sound in.
So who's worse, you or him?
I hope I am, but he's learned a lot in his many years.
When David saw Eddie's eyes begin to blink slowly, he took her hands in his and pulled her upright. For a moment, they were standing very near each other. Instantly, the relaxed attitude was gone, and they were both tense.
I have hot water for you, David said, breaking the tension as he turned toward the sink.
You can wash what you can reach, or you can strip naked and I'll hold a towel for you.
Eddie laughed again, the tension gone.
No, thank you. I think I'll just wash my face and hands and leave the rest to when I have a tub. I'm too tired to care how dirty I am.
I like earthy women.
I think, David Clare, that you like any kind of woman.
Think so, do you?
Then that's where you're very, very wrong.
Okay, you wash and I'll check the clothesline. Take your time.
Eddie didn't take much time washing. She was telling the truth when she said she didn't care how dirty she was. She gave her face, neck, and armpits a bit of a dash. Then she went into their bedroom and shut the door. As she began to undress, she looked at the two beds. It was extraordinary what 10 or so hours of hard physical labor could do to a person. 2 days ago, if she'd been told that she had to spend the night in the same room with a soldier, she would have said she'd rather sleep on a stone pallet in the rain. But now it seemed natural for David, not Sergeant Clare, but David, to sleep in the same room. On the chair at the end of the bed was a clean nightgown, and Eddie knew David had put it there for her. It was probably Aggie's, and it was so clean, and Eddie was so dirty, that she almost didn't put it on, but she did. She slipped it over her dirty body, pulled back the sheets and covers on the bed nearer the door, and was asleep in an instant. When she awoke, the room was dark, and something had jolted the bed. At first, she panicked. She had to get to the air raid shelter, had to find the girls and get them there first.
Shh, David said. It's only me. Go back to sleep.
She sat up on her elbows, trying to see in the dark. Turn on the light.
There is no light, he said. Remember? No electricity.
Oh, right, she said, lying back down.
Hamish.
That's right, he said soothingly. Just go back to sleep. She did, but was awakened again when something again hit the bed and she sat up. Sorry, David said. It's this damned brace, and the beds are close together. As soon as I can turn around, I'll quit hitting your bed. Now go back to sleep. This time, she was more fully awake. Would you get a lantern?
What for? He asked.
I want to see your leg.
There was a moment of silence before David spoke. As enticing as that sounds, my leg is fine. Eddie sat up straighter.
I think that tomorrow I should do the cooking and you should milk the cow and gather the eggs.
You win, he said, and a moment later he came back into the room holding the lantern. He was shirtless, shoeless, and wearing only the trousers that were too big for him. He put the lantern down on the table between the beds and said, Now what?
Off with them, Eddie said, as she got out of bed, went to the wardrobe, and took out the old shirt she'd worn that morning over her underwear. Judging by the fit of her clothes, Aggie was shorter and plumper than Eddie, which made the nightgown much too short, and the top fell away whenever she moved.
I love that gown, David said as he unbuckled his trousers.
Be quiet, or I'll tell Hamish the truth about us, and you'll have to sleep in the kitchen, on the floor.
You're threatening to punish me if I don't take off my trousers while I'm alone in a room with the most beautiful woman in the world? The woman I plan to—
Stop it, she said, but she was smiling.
When David struggled to get his trousers down over the heavy brace, she took the cuffs and pulled. He tried to make jokes, but she was too horrified by what she saw to smile. His leg was raw from the steel. The old padding had nearly all fallen away, and the straps of the big, cage-like thing had scraped and cut until his leg was a mass of blisters and bleeding sores.
I love General Austin, David said.
He'll hear about this from me. You can be sure of that, she said, her mouth clenched into a line of anger. Stay here, and I'm going to see what I can do to clean this up.
I'm all yours, baby, he said, as he leaned back on the pillows and went to sleep immediately.
When he awoke, Eddie was sitting on a kitchen chair, a bowl of hot water on the bedside table, and she was trying to wash some of the wounds and bandage them.
This hurts, doesn't it? She asked softly.
Not too much, he said. But she knew he was lying. She'd thought that her hands were bad, but she couldn't imagine what he'd gone through today, with those sharp edges cutting into him. She went to the wardrobe, pulled out another old shirt, and began to tear it into strips.
Your blisters and those cuts have stuck to the steel, so this is going to hurt, but I'm going to wrap cloth around the metal so it doesn't gouge you so much. Think you can stand it?
I'll do my best. As she started, she saw the way his jaw was working, saw the pain he was in, and she wanted to distract him.
So tell me about your family. Any brothers or sisters?
8 of them. I'm the second one, but— He took a breath against the pain.
Bannerman. 1 year older than me. Takes care of all of us. The best there is. He—
David broke off as some of his skin came away with the steel. Eddie thought it would be better if she talked.
My brother Bertrand is the laziest person in the world, she said.
Oh, yeah? And how lazy is that?
When he was 3 and saw all his gifts under the Christmas tree, he said, Who's going to open them for me?
David gave a little snort of laughter.
I've heard worse. When he was 6, my father bought him a bicycle and took him out to teach him to ride it.
And?
Bertrand did very well. My father ran along behind him, holding on, and my brother balanced perfectly. But when my father let go and the bicycle stopped, Bertrand asked why. When my father said he had to push on the pedals, my brother left it lying there in the street, and he never got on a bicycle again.
David was still wincing when she cleaned one of the cuts, but less so.
Not bad, but I've heard worse.
When he was 12, my parents took us out to a restaurant, the first one we'd ever been to,
and my father ordered steaks for each of us. When my brothers came, he looked at it and asked how he was to eat it. My father showed him how to cut the steak, then how to chew it. My brother called the waiter back and ordered a bowl of mashed potatoes. Okay, David said, that's getting up there. But I have heard a few worse. When he was 16, my mother arranged for her beloved son to go to a dance with a very nice young girl. He was to pick her up at 6 p.m. At 6:30, Bertrand was sitting in the living room, and my father asked him why he hadn't gone on his date. My brother said, because she hasn't come to get me yet. David laughed. All this is a lie, isn't it? Not a word. But how did he survive? What does he do with himself? How'd he get through school? My brother is a brilliant young man. In school, he'd get someone to tell him what a book was about, and 5 minutes later, he could discuss it, debate it. He loves to sit and talk. Eddie wrung out a piece of cloth. And gossip. He knows everyone in town, and they all tell him their secrets. I guess he didn't go to war. 4F, flat feet. When Eddie gently pushed at another piece of cloth, David gave a little groan of pain. Want to hear more? Yes, he said through clenched teeth. Got any about Austin? Something mean and juicy? No, just Bertrand's stories. Want to hear why he didn't go to his own wedding? David opened his eyes wide and looked at her. Tell me. My mother arranged everything. Bertrand saw the girl, said she was suitable, and that was enough for both my mother and the girl. Marrying money and an old name, right? I already told you there was no money. But yes, there was the name, Eddie said. My mother was thrilled and spent months planning the most elaborate wedding the town had ever seen. My father had to mortgage our old house. The evening before the wedding, my father went into his son's room to have a talk with him about the wedding night. The wedding night, David whispered. I like this story the best of any you've told, maybe of any I've ever heard in my whole life. No one knows exactly what was said by my father, but everyone heard Bertrand shout for the one and only time in his life. He yelled, I have to do what? David started laughing. Now you have me. That is the worst story I've ever heard. What happened? Bertrand stayed home the next day, and nothing anyone said or did could get him to move. And his bride? She showed up for the wedding that never happened. Poor dear. Her family was so humiliated, 6 months later they moved to Atlanta. What did your brother say to explain? Nothing. To my knowledge, he's never mentioned that day. The work other people do has never concerned him. And your mother? After that, she stopped trying to manage her son's life, and my father said that that was almost worth the expense of the wedding. David was really laughing now, and Eddie had finished with the bandages. She could tell by his eyes that he was at last comfortable enough to sleep. She pulled a quilt over him, then went to her own bed. When he whispered, "Good night," she smiled and went back to sleep.